The leadership of Babi Tsengiwe, you welcome this afternoon. This is the time that we normally allocate to look at our annual performances, both financial and non-financial performance of our institutions. So we did receive your annual plan, report, and which includes the audited financial statement. We would like to thank you for that, and as usual, we'd want to interact with you on the report. But we first want to hear your summary of this particular report on your performance. We will be giving you that opportunity to do that, and immediately afterwards we'll hear your responses and then close the meeting. There'll be questions, I mean, and then get your responses and close the meeting. We have until 3 o'clock, because we've started earlier, so that we are able to finish on time. If we go to 3:30, still okay. But we're going to be giving you more or less an hour to present your summary of the report, and thereafter deliberate on that report. As I said, you're welcome, and I can see the two members that are new, ne? Is it one or two?
One.
Okay. I think I'm going to mention members' names as they ask questions, so that you are familiar with who they are. Otherwise, the rest of the members know who we are. Thank you so much. May I, without any waste of time, hand over to you, Babi Tsengiwe, for the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, honorable members. Let me start by introducing the ITEC delegation. I'm Siyabulela Tsengiwe, the Chief Commissioner. Next to me is Lebogang Bogatsu. She's our acting CFO. The CFO, you know, Zanoxolo, left us last month for greener pastures. And we have Philip Simela, the General Manager, Corporate Services. And next to Philip is Rikard Piart, one of our senior managers in tariff investigations. Chair, let me not waste time and go straight into the presentation. In the table of contents, those are the items that we will speak to. I will cover item 1 to 9, and then items 10, 11, and 12 on the financial performance will be covered by Lebogang, our acting CFO. Early in the year, Chair, honorable members, the Minister of Trade and Industry provided a glimpse to changes in the global trade policy landscape. On how South Africa should respond, the Minister states, among others, that as a small economy accounting for only 0.5% of world trade, if we become overly protectionist, we risk being denied access to other markets on whom jobs and productive sectors in our country depend. If we break trade rules, there will be consequences and we risk retaliation. But within these constraints, the emerging new circumstances call on us to be more resolute and indeed smart in advancing and defending our own national interests. This will include defending our right to take tariff decisions based on our needs and to deploy appropriate trade remedies. The trade policy adopted in 2012 identified tariffs as tools of industrial development. It said trade policy is subordinate to industrial policy and must be informed by the needs of industrial development. It says we must not hesitate to defend and use trade remedies and access dispute bodies when we are being unfairly treated. In the context of a new era in international trade relations, this policy statement by the minister certainly provides ITEC with a vision on how to approach the administration of its trade instruments into the future. Honorable members, government is increasingly taking a holistic approach in its policy response to sectors in distress. This has been evident in the case of steel, in which government coordinated a package of measures in response to the challenges faced by the domestic steel industry due to changed global market conditions. We are currently seeing the same approach in the case of poultry, which really maximizes value for the attainment of government's policy objectives. The next slide you are seeing, honorable members, on tariff investigations is a slide you have become familiar with. The trend analysis of tariff increases covering the period 2003 to 2017. You can see, honorable members, in that chart that there is a rise in applications for tariff increases and approvals by the Commission at the onset of the financial crisis, 2008-2009. The manufacturing sector continues to struggle, requesting support from ITEC. A significant number of the tariff increases in the last 2 years that you see in that chart pertains to the steel industry. That slide provides import tariffs that were imposed in the year under review. Five product lines have to do with the steel industry. One was declined, as you can see, the chemical product PET, as well as we had also one investigation that was terminated. It was also for an application to increase tariffs on tinplate. It was terminated after the relevant parties had found each other. But the rest of the product lines, mostly of which are steel products, as you can see, the Commission recommended the increases which were implemented. The next slide is on rebates which are a waiver on existing duties. In 2016-17, 5 rebate creations and amendments were approved by the Commission. 5 applications for the creation of rebates, as you can see in that table, were declined by the Commission. And the main reason for this being that the subject products that the applicants wanted to import under rebate are products that are manufactured domestically. On the next slide, it's investigations with respect to tariff reductions. Only 2 applications for reduction in duty were approved by the Commission. And the rest, as you can see, honorable members, were declined based on our adjudication criteria. As you are aware, we administer the incentive scheme for the automotive industry. We do so together with the DTI, that is the Automotive Production and Development Program. This is one of the successful industrial sector strategies of the DTI. This program has four components. ITEC is responsible for administering the three components: the tariff component, the production incentive, as well as the volume assembly allowance. The automotive investment scheme, which is the fourth component, that's administered directly by the DTI. The DTI is the policymaking authority on the APDP, and as ITEC, we administer the three components of the APDP that I have already highlighted. During the year under review, we adjudicated certificates under the APDP, the eligible production certificates, production rebate credit certificates, and in terms of our time frames, we were within our turnaround times. We also do verifications on applications that we receive to ensure that applicants are compliant to the requirements of the APDP. And in terms of verifications, we were also within the set turnaround times. There has also been recently an adjustment to the requirements to allow for more participants under the scheme, as captured in the last paragraph that you see in that slide. As you know, honorable members, there are three trade remedy instruments, that is anti-dumping, countervailing measures, and safeguards. Historically, the instrument mostly used has been the anti-dumping measures. The chart that you see shows the trend in the initiation of original anti-dumping investigations, which is a cause for concern, as you can see how it has been going down. And in fact, if you can have a look at the recent past 3 years, there has been no initiation of original anti-dumping investigations. This is largely explained by our bilateral trade arrangements. So, honorable members, you may hear complaints about dumping, but the use of the anti-dumping instrument is something else which poses serious challenges. On trade remedies, starting with the reviews, since during the year under review, we did not conduct any original anti-dumping investigations. With regards to reviews, anti-dumping duties lapse after 5 years unless a sunset review is conducted to maintain or increase the anti-dumping duties. And so during the year under review, two of these anti-dumping investigations were in progress, that is the unframed glass mirrors as well as the chicken meat portions. And two were finalized and duties were maintained on both products, that is the chemical product, the PET, as well as on unframed glass mirrors. In that slide, we provide the two sunset reviews that were finalized but were carried over from the previous financial year, 2015-16. On safeguard investigations, which are measures that are taken against an unforeseen surge of imports due to unforeseen circumstances causing serious injury to the domestic industries. Although safeguards were rarely used in the past, we are now seeing an increased interest by industry in safeguards. And as you can see, three were initiated in 2016, and all of these have now been finalized by ITEC. The first being the frozen bone-in portions of chicken originating from the European Union, We have finalized that investigation, and it's now with the Minister of Trade and Industry to take it up with the trading partners, the EU, under the Economic Partnership Agreement. We also finalized the safeguard investigation on hot rolled flat products, and duties were imposed on a sliding scale over a period of 3 years at 12, 10, and 8%. And lastly, we also finalized a safeguard investigation on cold rolled products. In terms of import and export controls, there is a limited number of products that are under import and export control for health, safety, environmental, and strategic purposes. During 2016-17, import permits were adjudicated and issued, amounting to 18,660. The target was 16,000. The majority of the permits were for the listed products, as you can see in that slide, from marine resources to automotives. Export permits issued in 2016-17 amounted to 12,828. We also provide under export permits the product description in the table that you see of the permits issued. With regards to controls on scrap metal, honorable members are aware that during 2013, the Minister of Economic Development issued a policy directive directing ITEC to regulate the exportation of ferrous and non-ferrous waste and scrap. The policy intent being to promote scrap metal beneficiation and to reverse the decline in the metal fabricating consuming industries. The price preference system, the control mechanism, was set for a period of 5 years, which ends next year in September. We have commissioned an impact study, and that study has been finalized and will be forwarded to the Minister of Economic Development. On impact assessments, over the past 3 years, impact studies were carried out pertaining to support for the listed products, from parts for passenger aeroplanes to blankets and glass. Overall, the results show considerable gains in output, value addition, price competitiveness, investment, and jobs. During 2016-17, we managed to cover the poultry industry. That is the only impact study that we did. And one of the highlights in that study is that despite the tariff support that ITEC provided for the poultry industry in 2013, imports are landed on the South African market at prices below factory gate prices, which then continues to put pressure on the poultry industry. With regards to achievements against targets, on tariff investigations, all targets were met except for the tariff increases. With regards to trade remedies, we met all our targets. With regards to import and export controls, on the adjudication and the issuing of the permits, we met all our set targets. Honorable members, there's two industries that continue to be on the national agenda, the steel and poultry, and we thought it would be proper that as we provide a report on our annual performance, we also update you on the developments with regards to these two industries. In 2015 and early 2016, import tariffs were increased from 0 to 10% on a wide range of primary steel products following rigorous investigations by ITEC. as we were conducting these investigations, it became apparent that these increases upstream would put pressure on the competitiveness position of the downstream manufacturers. The Commission attached conditions to the tariff support for the primary steel industry, in which commitments were made by ArcelorMittal on fair pricing that would exclude duties. This was meant to mitigate the price pressures downstream. AMSA also made commitments on production, investment, and jobs. These commitments were to be monitored by a committee of the Commission established by the Minister of Economic Development in June 2016. Last year, we self-initiated investigations to look at increasing tariffs for the downstream that faces stiff competition from imports of the competing finished products. To date, tariffs have been increased on products such as wire fasteners, wire netting, welded link chains, grinding balls, with some increases still in the pipeline. All this is intended to give support to the downstream, following the support that we had given to the upstream. Rebates are also being created for the downstream in the case of specific products that cannot be manufactured domestically, that is, upstream. Recently, safeguard duties that are different from the ordinary customs duties that were first imposed have now been imposed on hot rolled steel to be phased down over a period of 3 years. Following these trade measures, honorable members, we have witnessed a decline in imports of primary steel and increasing orders for the domestically manufactured steel, that is the primary steel. The structural business at Evraz has now been reopened and people re-employed. You will recall that at the height of the steel industry crisis, Evraz had to close down. They have now reopened. Jobs have been retained, although with some outstanding challenges of the rising input costs, including electricity and transport, and a domestic demand which is not so strong, and the low growth rates. The difficulty in coming up with trade measures, honorable members, for the steel industry has been the need to balance the interests in the whole value chain, that is the primary and the downstream. The integrated approach that EDD and the DTI have taken in response to the steel industry crisis is highly commendable. It maximizes value for the attainment of government's policy objectives. On poultry, honorable members, import tariffs on poultry meat were increased towards the end of 2013. An increase that was based on an application by the South African Poultry Association on behalf of a number of poultry producers. There are anti-dumping duties on bone-in chicken meat portions originating from the USA that were imposed in 2000. These anti-dumping duties have been maintained through sunset reviews in 2006 and 2012. And currently there is an ongoing sunset review with regards to these anti-dumping duties against imports originating from the USA. In December 2015, a temporary rebate was created to allow for a free anti-dumping duty importation of 65,000 tons of U.S. bone chicken portions annually. This was done in the context of South Africa's continued participation under AGOA. There are also anti-dumping duties on bone-in chicken portions against imports from Germany, Netherlands, and the UK that were imposed in February 2015. However, they have not been as effective as we had thought they would be. ITAC has finalized the investigation for a safeguard measure in terms of the economic partnership agreement on frozen bone-in portions of chicken originating from the EU. Again, as I said earlier on, honorable members, this is now a matter that is with the Minister of Trade and Industry, and the Minister will be raising this up with the trading partners. Lastly, honorable members, on poultry, the avian flu outbreak could not have visited the poultry farms at a worse time. The losses are huge. This is a matter for the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. Lastly, on human resources management, we have established health and wellness programs for our staff. We also provide training as per our workplace skills plan. We have a program in terms of our performance management that gives recognition of excellent performance. We have been quite successful in our internship program, however limited it is in terms of the numbers, where most of our interns get absorbed within ITAC or find employment elsewhere. In 2016-17, we appointed 4 interns and 2 were absorbed within ITAC. ITAC's workforce, honorable members, at the end of 31st March 2017, was 126 warm bodies, 70 in the core business and 56 in support services. In addition to this, we had 16 contract employees. Our vacancy rate stands at 3.8%. Honorable members, I will now hand over to Lebogang, our acting CFO, to cover the last part, the financial part.
Good day, honorable members. On corporate governance, compliance and internal control, ITAC as a public entity is required to comply with all applicable legislation and regulations relevant to the public sector. The policies of the entity have been developed after taking into account the relevant and applicable legislation and regulations such as the PFMA, the ITA Act, etc. The checklists have been developed to assist in enhancing compliance and any identified non-compliances are addressed. ITAC maintains effective internal controls which are designed to ensure that risks are reduced or managed and that the organization is able to meet its objectives. The internal controls are continuously monitored throughout the year by management, internal audit, and by other relevant committees. The audit committee report. The audit committee held 4 regular meetings during the year under review. According to the audit committee report, the system of internal control applied by ITAC over financial risk and risk management is effective, efficient, and transparent. The audit committee is satisfied with the content and the quality of the monthly and quarterly reports prepared by ITAC management. The audit committee is satisfied that the internal audit function is operating effectively and that it has addressed the risk pertinent to ITAC with the support of the Cosoft internal audit function. Risk management. ITAC has a risk management unit which conducts risk assessment continuously and also presents the risk register to the risk management committee for review. The Risk Management Committee is a subcommittee of the Audit Committee which monitors risk management activities and presents its operations to the Audit Committee. Then the Risk Management Committee then makes recommendations to the Chief Commissioner to approve the reviewed risk register. According to the National Treasury Risk Management Capability Maturity Assessment, ITEC is a level 5, meaning that it is at the pertinent risks are well managed. Honorable members, the opinion of the Auditor General. ITEC obtained an unqualified audit opinion in the 2016-2017 financial year. Irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. According to the AGSA report, ITEC did not incur irregular expenditure in the 2016-2017 financial year. There was also no fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred in the 2016-2017 financial year. Implementation of the audit recommendations. ITEC has developed an audit action plan template with actions to be taken in order to address the audit findings relating to compliance as identified by the Auditor General. The internal audit 3 years rolling plan include following up on audit findings of the Auditor General SA. The Executive Committee also plays a role of monitoring the implementation of the action plan through a report presented on implementation. Our operating results for the assets for 2016-2017 financial year. ITEC is in a sound financial position as assets are more than its liabilities. The total assets amounted to 23 million. Of the 23 million, 4 million is our assets, 19.1 million is our cash and cash equivalent, accounts receivable is about 400,000. Operating results on total liabilities. Below is the graphic presentation of our total liabilities at 15.3 million. Our accounts payable is 3.7 million. Other liabilities 10 million and our conditional grants is 1.5 million. Our operating results on revenue. Total revenue amounted to 92.7 million. Of that, our government subsidies 87 million, conditional grant is 3.8 million. The interest that we received from our call account is 1.4 million and other income was just about 410,000. Our operating results on expenses for the 2016-2017 financial year. ITEC's total expenditure amounted to 104 million with a deficit per cap reporting amounted to 11.5 million. This deficit is largely funded from previously accumulated surplus. Contributors to the deficit includes the following. The increase in our rent, the salaries of the contract employees, and our interns. However, the EBD made additional allocation for conditional grants to cover salaries of scrap metal contractors. Our results on cost containment measures. This is the item that we have managed to cut down cost on due to the difficult economic times. The cost items are international travel and subsistence, conferences and workshops. In 2013-2014 financial year, the international travel and subsistence was 1.7 million and in the year under review it was 162,000. The conference and workshops in 2013-2014 it was 515,000 and in the year under review it was 83,649. Our additional funding request. Honorable members, ITEC made a request for additional funding to the National Treasury via the EDD in May 2017. The basis for this request is the following. During the 2014 MTEF allocation, ITEC's baseline budget for the 2015-16 and 2016-17 financial years was reduced by 4.8 million and 7.3 million, a total reduction amounting to 12.1 million. The major cost items where funding is needed are our rental, our PPS project, and the legal fees. According to the financial situation, ITEC recorded surpluses in 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, and we have been recording deficits in 2014, 2015, 2016, and 2016-2017. The deficits have been financed from accumulated surplus. It is also anticipated that a deficit will be reported in 2017-18 as the accumulated surplus will be expected to have been fully utilized. Honorable members, thank you.
Thanks, Chair. That's the end of our presentation.
Thank you so much for the presentation. Tenure and the acting CFO. Members, here is the presentation for interaction in terms of ITEC performance for the year.
No, thank you very much. Chair, I like the quote. First, I want to welcome the report. You know, in the opening remarks, I think which they are good was the commissioner speak about protectionists. In our view, as we agreed with you, that I think in South Africa, we're not really, really protect our space in terms of economic development. Ever since we received our liberation, we moved to a free market economy in terms of investment. And it created problem for us in the World Trade, Organization. Now, everyone, it's like China. China benefits more than us in whatever what we are doing with them. And it creates problem on manufacturing side in whatever way we go. Now, in my view, I think we are really able to be assisted in terms of trying to close that gap so that we're able to protect our space. This particular government. We can't do more ourselves as a government unless we've been assisted by those that are in that space. You find them in that space. I think we need to start doing that because really it's a problem. Because in South Africa or in Africa in general, even those that were liberated before us, they do a free market and it becomes a free for all. I wanted to comment with that, Chair. Otherwise, I don't have problem with other issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also appreciate the presentation by the team from ITEC, led by the Commissioner. I think, Chairperson, we understand the strenuous conditions under which ITEC is operating now. Indeed, it is true, we agree with the DTI. It would be detrimental, you know, to just impose more and more tariffs and so on, because it will close the space for us outside. But having said that, I see here, Commissioner, that you were expecting about 16,000 import permit applications. You have approved 18,660 and only 12,828 export permits were granted. That is the year, I think, April 2016 to March this year. Well, we know that those who want to import are also trying to contribute to the economy. They can't be shut down, but
one is tempted to think that you'd want to issue more of the export permits than this import permits, because we all know as soon as they start importing, they harm us in a way. They harm the local players here, because it becomes difficult for them to compete with the prices that they bring in here. So we'd like to get some explanation from you why this is the case, why these things are moving in the same direction, all of them, import permits, export permits. The second clarity that we'd like to hear from you, Babatsenyo, is around AGOA. From your own perspective, given the economic conundrum that we are in now, do you think there are more advantages over disadvantages contained in this AGOA thing? We're saying this because we're really experiencing problems from them. Like, for instance, in the chicken and poultry industry, this dumping thing and so on, we're trying to contain it, but obviously it's very, very difficult. If you could just explain whether there are more advantages from AGOA as opposed to the disadvantages. And on the travel and subsistence spending, we see that in the 2013-2014 financial year, you were spending over 1.7 million. And we are very happy that you've brought it down to 162,545 this time around. Now, while we commend you for bringing down the figures, Commissioner, the question is, the money that you were spending previously, before you came down, would you say it was fruitless expenditure? If it was not, what happened to what you were achieving through those expenditures? Because I'm sure you were not just traveling. There was a purpose behind. Now that you are no longer spending that much, is the quality of your work now affected, you know? And lastly, is the issue of the rentals. I can't remember what we spoke about the last time we were together, but perhaps if you could just remind us what your plans are as far as accommodation is concerned, because rentals will be going up all the time. Maybe we need to have some kind of a permanent solution, a place where you can be able to operate freely without incurring much more costs. Perhaps if you can hear from you what you think could be the solution instead of the current arrangement. That I can't remember whether you're still with the DTI college somewhere and so on. It appears not to be working very, very well, but let's hear what you think should be happening to address that particular problem, so that we can also see from ourselves how we can support such a request. I thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, and let me also welcome the presentation by ITEC. It's after lunch, the energy is a bit down. Maybe that will work positively on your case, but the presentation, it's well received. My questions are just few. It's on the AGIS report that you got an unqualified report, which has got some findings. Maybe you can share what are those findings and what's your plan in addressing them, those findings, and what is your approach so far
in getting a clean audit as an ITEC. We really see that you are trying so hard, you are minimizing there, but tell us, where are you now in getting the clean audit? Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. And thanks for the presentation from ITEC. We talk of the vacancy rate for the period under review of 3.8%. Could you share with us which are those positions that are not yet filled? And also, on the issue of implementation of audit recommendations, we talk of some weaknesses. Can you share with us which are those weaknesses that emanated from the report of the audit committee?
Sabonga, Pastrelli. Yeah, Temple Christie. Okay. Thank you, Siabonga. With the presentation as we got, and the questions are there for you to respond to, but before you respond, I appreciate the minister's word here on ensuring that we balance, so that we don't find ourselves isolated in future in as far as trade is concerned. Yes, we might be a small player in the global economy, but I think in the African economy, we are a much more considerable player. We look at this from the point of view of being one of the leading economies in Africa, in the continent, and therefore looking at the interest of Africa or South African interests with an eye of the continent. And I'm a bit worried when it comes to the motor or auto industry. I'll tell you why, and I'm glad that you are one of those administering the MITP program. In as far as you're concerned, may I ask this question? In terms of the incentive scheme, MITP incentive scheme, do you see value for money? Is what we're paying for really benefiting us as South African economy? Especially in terms of jobs and in terms of local developing local content. I think that Glenn has spoken to the need to increase certificates that are export orientated. And I'd like to agree with him on that, because that's where we would want to see ourselves increasing. And what is the impact of the program on the continent market? That is the benefits of that. I have said initially that I support those who agree with the statement by the minister, but at the same time we'd want to see ourselves also not being abused because of our economic standing in the globe. We'd want to see our government also ensuring that protects the needs of our citizens, whether it's health related or is otherwise, because I just want to find out, because with this imports, especially chicken or meat imports, are we seeing any prices in South Africa reducing, or the prices as high as ever, irrespective of the fact that we are importing meat from the US. I thought that one of the reasons was to make, you know, to promote competition and to make the meat inexpensive, but it looks like we're finding poultry more expensive than before. And what are we saying about the local businesses? We can see that they are closing because of this. What are we saying about that? Just want to appreciate the fact that the work on the steel industry bore some fruits, and we would want to urge that we continue to do that until our downstream industries are able to be comfortable within the industry. We come into PFMA. There are various, I know members have asked questions, but I just want to be upfront and indicate that there are findings that are said to be material in nature. One of them being that you're not complying with the key legislation. Secondly, that your targets and your indicators are not conforming, nor using SMART principles. You are not using SMART principles when you develop your indicators and targets, which then makes it a bit difficult to audit and also to be held accountable, because we can only hold you accountable if we understand how you develop that and whether you're complying with the necessary prescriptions. I'm glad that this time we're not talking about irregular expenditures and everything, that which is an improvement. We'd like to commend you on that. Thank you so much. May we hand over to you for responses.
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to share the questions with my team and the General Manager Corporate Services will start with the questions that have been raised with regards to the audit findings, compliance with key legislation, what is that referring to, the targets and the indicators, not adhering to the SMART principles, what is the AG referring to. So the General Manager Corporate Services will speak to the audit findings as well as the action plan that we have developed to address the audit findings. And then our CFO will speak to the finance questions on the reduction in travel and subsistence. What has happened to those savings? Has this impacted on our performance? The GM will also speak to the big issue of our accommodation plans. The rental, it's a long-standing issue. He will speak to that. So, Chair, I will start with the GM. Honorable Matsimbi also said that we have an unqualified opinion, but what's our plan to get a clean audit? We have this plan. I think both the General Manager as well as Lebogang can speak to our plan for a clean audit. And then the vacant positions, which ones are they? The GM will address that. The weaknesses from the audit committee, Lebogang will address that. Once they have addressed those questions, honorable members, then I will deal with the rest of the questions that have to do with our core functions.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, good day. One of the first questions was around clean audit. If I may just highlight two things. For us to get a clean audit, we need financial statement to be free of material misstatements. We also need to ensure that there are no material findings on non-compliance with key legislation, and also no material findings on annual performance report. In terms of our 16-17 annual report, the financial statement, there were no material misstatements. That's one. In terms of non-compliance, there was also no material finding. But what the AG regarded as material findings was in the annual performance report. That is, out of 28 indicators that AG audited, only one indicator was found not to be SMART, according to them. And how they had calculated materiality of that is something else. But it was only one out of 28 indicators. AG only audited objective one. Nothing was found in objective one, which were 20 indicators. And objective three, 8 indicators, they only found one. That's, according to me, the only thing that was key that they have found. Now, the second thing, according to them, which could actually come to maybe the non-compliance, was that as an institution, for every work that we do, we normally get taken to court by our clients. In this case, we as ITEC do not procure the services of the legal services. What we do, we go to the Department of Justice. And according to AG, the Department of Justice did not follow their own procurement. And therefore, that they wanted to regard that as irregular expenditure on our part. But in actual fact, there was nothing that ITEC could have done in terms of the legal. So those were just the key main findings in terms of the AG report. And I can only say that's the reason why we did not get a clean audit. Now, in terms of the plans going forward, each and every year after the audit, we develop a checklist, basically, to ensure that we do not have the repeat findings going forward. And in this case, in order to clear the finding of indicator not being smart, we have developed a technical indicator description where we've made sure that that particular indicator will not come back as an indicator that is not smart in future. If I move to the next question, the question of vacancy rate, the 3.8, let me just count. Out of the total of 131 members, staff members, 126 positions were filled. That means about 5 were vacant. And out of that 5, the key positions that were vacant is one, the DCC. And that has been vacant for quite a number of years. And that is outside ITEC's control, as it's our parent department's responsibility. We also have the PA to the Chief Commissioner. And that we can explain it because the DCC have a PA. So when the Chief Commissioner's PA resigned, we allocated the PA of the DCC to the Chief Commissioner. We subsequently put that on hold because it would be pointless just to hire the PA when the DCC is not around, and that position has been vacant since 2012. The other type position really will be the normal positions. And what we are seeing at ITEC is that because of the nature of our work, even though we advertise the post, internal people are the ones who are getting those positions. Therefore, we have that a cycle whereby we advertise, internal people get the post. So we always have that opening in terms of the positions. Well, the weaknesses, as highlighted by the auditor, by audit committee, relate to the findings, as highlighted by the AGSA. In terms of accommodation, this has been going on for quite some time. 2 or 3 years ago, we were given a letter by the DG requesting us to move out of the campus. But before we could move, we made sort of a study to say this is what we're going to need. But in a nutshell, before we move anywhere, we are going to need commitment in terms of finance that we'll be able to set the office. The commitment never came, so we were not able to do anything. The pressure that we are facing is purely because of the DCI increasing the rent by 56%. From 3.3, we are now paying 6 million, which is quite high. But what we did, when we complained, we were given additional 3.3 million by the department. But it was only once off. However, the situation is going to be recurring up until we can get a permanent solution to that.
Honorable members, on SNT, which is travel, international travel expense, the quality of our work was not compromised. The money now, what we're using for is to pay the SNT for the scrap metal workers. The Department of Economic Development is only funding the salaries of the contract workers. So in turn, we also have to fund the salaries of the PPS contractors as well as the travel and expense of the scrap metal contractors, because their main work is to go out there and inspect. Hence, the bulk of the travel will go to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. With regards to the Minister of Trade and Industry's policy statement, I think it's a statement that has been welcomed in this committee by the honorable members that have spoken on this statement. Although, Honorable January, you had some reservations with regards to the history of our trade reforms, that you argue that we've benefited less than countries like China. But I guess, as other honorable members were saying, the chair was saying, there's got to be a balance. If we want market access for our exports, then it goes without saying that there is some access that we must give to the trading partners. So there is that give and take. As you know, these trade agreements are a responsibility of the DTI, and I don't want us as ITEC to bite more than we can chew in the policy space of the DTI. I guess they do impact assessments of these trade agreements. So I guess it would be interesting for honorable members to access those. I think what the minister is emphasizing is that for ITEC, there is still this policy space. Even though we have made binding commitments under the WTO, we still have a policy space that we must not hesitate to make use of to protect South African factories and jobs, which is what we are committed to doing as ITEC. But yes, there are limitations. We cannot go beyond the WTO binding commitments. Honorable Kliale, why is it that we are issuing more export permits than import, or more import permits than export permits? Remember, really, the purpose of these import and export controls is not similar to putting up tariff barriers as putting up import tariffs to curb imports. These are for controlling products for health, safety, and environmental reasons, and we collaborate with the relevant departments. So out of about 6,800 product lines in our tariff book, it's just about 350 tariff lines that are under import and export control. So the rest of the tariff book is not under any import and export controls for the reasons that these are really for a specific purpose in terms of international agreements and our domestic health and safety standards. So if there is an import permit application that meets the criteria, we will issue such import permits. If you take, for example, second-hand goods, the importation of all second-hand goods is under control. But there are certain categories of second-hand goods for specific uses domestically. These are imports of second-hand goods that won't be sold in the domestic market. Some of these would be used tires, used as raw materials for the manufacturing of the final product. So we would adjudicate and issue those import permits. So that's why you have this imbalance that you are seeing between import permits and the export permits. So it depends on the number of applications that you receive and those that qualify in terms of the criteria we've got to approve. With regards to AGOA, you will recall that when South Africa was threatened by the USA of being removed from the AGOA arrangement, the Minister of Trade and Industry worked very hard to ensure continued participation. That tells you that there is more to gain from the market access that we get in the U.S. through AGOA than to protect our poultry industry to the extent of making the Americans unhappy. So we are quite huge on automotives in terms of exports to the USA. Some of the processed agricultural products, including wines. So the Minister of Trade and Industry could not give up that market access for automotives and other products and not to make a concession on poultry coming from the USA. Chair, you raised also a number of questions, amongst which you were also citing South Africa as a leading African economy. Again, which is really an area of the DTI, we have seen a lot of good work coming out of that in terms of promoting regional integration in SADC, wherein now the focus is on developing industrial value chains within SADC, which is our biggest export market as South Africa in the continent. It's in the region. It's in SADC. But the problem is that if in our trade relations with the other SADC member states, there's a huge imbalance in terms of trade, then it becomes an issue. Hence, South Africa is now promoting these regional industrial value change so that there is an exchange of goods. If there is no productive capacity in other SADC member states, what then do they exchange with South Africa? And I agree with you, Chair. The continent is a growing and very important export market for South Africa. And what is important about it is that in the export bucket, the majority of our exports to the continent, it's value-added goods. It's not raw materials. So DTI continues then to promote integration, not just in the region, the trilateral as well as the continental-wide trade integration. Because we're trading less amongst ourselves, which then opens us up. Most South African companies that have export markets into the continent, manufactured goods, they are struggling to compete with imports from China. They are being displaced in the African continent in terms of imports of manufactured goods from China. But if you have this continent-wide integration, then then it means you promote intercontinental trade. Che, you were saying you are worried about the automotive industry. This is quite a huge incentive, but it has been very successful, Che. If you compare sector strategies of the DTI for all the sectors, this is the most successful. Our automotive industry is the most resilient in terms of production, jobs. We've recently had huge investments in this industry. Local content remains a challenge in the sense that a lot of components get imported for the assembly of the motor vehicles. And so DTI is also working on a strategy to deepen component manufacturing that would then feed into the assembly of the motor vehicles. The thing is with industrial policy, yes, it comes at a cost. So the cost is the rebates on duties that we administer, as well as the higher prices that consumers pay, because it's a protected industry. With regards to chicken meat, why is it that prices are not reducing? I don't see them reducing, Chair, because remember, even the justification for increasing the import tariffs was based on the fact that South African manufacturers cannot compete on price with the imports. Imports are coming in at relatively low prices that they cannot compete with. They just render domestic manufacturers economically unviable and unsustainable. Hence, we've got to increase tariffs, which has the effect of increasing prices. I think the recent increases in prices also had to do with the drought that we have just come out from. The cost of inputs, the major input for growing poultry is feed. And because we had drought, there was less supply of feed, hence feed costs went up. With the favorable climatic conditions, it's expected that there will be a relief for the poultry industry in terms of feed costs. And also the trade measures that government is putting up to protect the poultry industry. The thing is, from our experience as ITEC, even if we increase tariffs, if you do not complement that with some of the supply side measures, like, for example, the addressing the issue of input costs, as well as research and technology for industry to become more efficient, as well as promoting the demand for local poultry in terms of government procurement. If you don't have this package that complements what ITEC does, then it becomes a challenge. Chair, I'm hoping that I have covered most of the questions.
Yes, you did answer most of the questions, all of the questions, I guess, unless a member would raise his or her hand to say no. I take it that questions were answered and members are comfortable with those responses. Mm-hmm. That's it then.
I see that the time is gone, but it's not that they've not responded, Chair. It's just a concern that we have as members. The fact that ITEC is doing a very good job for the country, for government. On the other hand, the DTI sees them
Eskom cash, you see. And then they raise the rent, they do all sorts of things. But they are in one family, government. It does not make a lot of sense, Chair. I think the EDD, we need to speak to EDD so that they put a certain plan together. I did not get from the explanation that came from ATEC as to what their plan is. If we were to approach a particular government institution, what would be that plan? The explanation I got was just that they were thinking of moving, then they thought that they need to have money, but there was no money coming. But there should be a plan that we think if we were to do like this or have a place of our own, we need land or we need whatever, this is what will require the services and so on. A full-fledged plan that is sellable. I think they need that in the future, but I think we need to try and help them. Otherwise, we are in trouble, you see. They got a once-off grant of $3-point-something for just that time, but they've got to pay this increased rates all the time, so it does not make sense, you know. Thank you.
I hope that's a battle that we might we've been on this since I think 2010. It got better. It wasn't as bad as this, but it has gotten better. We're hoping that as time goes on, yes, we will engage engage the department on this particular matter. It's not only ITEC that's affected. I think all the parastatals within the department are affected. Thank you for the responses, though. I just want to indicate that if you are to make an improvement, you must accept that you are in a particular situation. If you go through the Auditor General's statement and audit opinion section, you'll realize that you do have opinions. And they talk to the issues that I alluded to. I did not include also the leadership issue that they raised also very sharply. Members can attest to that. So there are issues that I feel that you have to accept that you are in that situation for you to be able to put necessary remedial action towards them. This takes us to the end of the meeting, and we would like to really appreciate the work that you're doing. It's quite technical, but very important for the country. It's a very difficult or very not an easy job to do, where you need to balance things. At the end of the day, we want everything to favor us. At the end of the day, we understand it's not easy. It's not possible either to do that. And to do that job, you know, at the end of the day, trying to protect the interests of the country, it's another thing. But all what we're saying is that we have to put a sharp eye so that we are able to see a threat very far, so that we are not taken for granted. That's what we're trying to say. We understand that we are a global player and we cannot close, and moreover that we are an open market economy. We cannot close. We just have to exercise our caution in whatever we are doing. That's all what we can say, especially because there are predators out there that are really looking at just consuming us as much as they can. So let's make sure that we guard our interests
or interest with very, very serious jealousy. That's all I can say. Members, thank you so much for the work that you've done for the week. I guess this takes us to next week, where we're going to be considering the work of the department plus our competition authorities. That will be on Tuesday. Then from Tuesday, consult your program for the fourth quarter, which will indicate that we'll be dealing with our first draft approval. We'll consider that of the BRRR, and then the final one we'll do it after we have looked at the first one. Please, let's look at the recommendation, observations and recommendations, because that is going to make our work very easy as we get to that period. So let's what I mean is that let's go and just think over and go and reach even further. Remember what we've gone through during the oversight, so that as we put our recommendations, they are very clear and succinct, very understandable to those who are not part of us. So that's all. And I'm appealing to Peter Paul that our reports are ready. The first draft is very ready on the day that we're supposed to be considering that. We still have an outstanding report, that is the oversight report, the statutory report and the oversight report that we will also be dealing with the coming weeks. Remember, we have joint meetings that we're supposed to be looking at also in the coming weeks. The one around the pharmaceutical with health and then and trade and industry. We also have a joint meeting with trade and industry, and we are also going to request for one with science and technology. I think that's the work that will take us to the end of the term, I mean of the year, calendar, school calendar year, up to the end of October, leading us to the last oversight for the year. Please revisit your program so that you can know what you're going to be doing. Otherwise, Babitsengiwe and your delegation and the members, thank you so much for honoring us and having prepared for this, and the responses that we've received. Have a lovely week ahead, the same as members. We'll see you on Tuesday. The meeting stands adjourned. Yep, the KKR and the link.